I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, Aboriginal elders and non-Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders. Good morning to each and every one of you. And good morning to all our listeners tuned in by the National Indigenous Radio Service spread right across the country. Welcome to Let's Talk. It's great to have your company. My guest is Brian Butler. Brian's a Orinda man from down South Australia. He was the ATSIC Commissioner for South Australia. And he was the chairman of the National Secretariat of Aboriginal Childcare, which initiated the Bringing Them Home report. Brian, welcome to Let's Talk. It's good to have you on the program.
Good to be back, Tiger.
Now, that sounds like you might have a conference phone. Is that a conference phone you got?
Just an ordinary phone.
All right, you got him up to your binung there, that handpiece?
Say that again?
You got that handpiece up to your ear there?
Yep.
Yeah, mate, that's all right. Just a bit of echo and stuff coming through, but he sounds all right. Brian, tell us, you're an aged rights advocate for Aboriginal elders is another hat that you wear. You've certainly been involved in Aboriginal issues and around for some considerable time. This particular hat you wear, aged rights advocate, what does that entail?
Well, you know, all my life, as an advocate for children, an advocate for early childhood services and youth and families, all along there's been a glaring example throughout this whole country of abuse to our elders. Abuse of our elders has been the critical thing, not only by our own people towards our elders, but the governments and the way in which they've undermined their authority in all of the communities, which has brought about the instability of communities. And so I'm really, really concerned about the way in which abuse is being poured onto our elders today. My role in South Australia is to make sure that the services, service agencies do their job and bring the services to our older people. And also, as I said before, make sure they don't get ripped off, because the greatest number of rip-offs of our old people are by their own families, their own sons and daughters, and they do that in all sorts of ways. And I think we all have to stop in our tracks, do a big turnaround, and start being more supportive and more protective of our old people.
Brian, in saying that, there must be... I'm just trying to think, would that be a minority situation? I mean, there are a number of us in our community that have all the love and respect and care for our elders. Is that a minority? Is that... what's the situation? What are the stats?
Unfortunately, it's not a minority. In my experience here in South Australia, and certainly those elders that I have contact with in the Northern Territory, it's very much a big thing, and a lot of our younger people mainly don't get taught the principles of Aboriginal culture in the way in which the first principle should be to respect the elders, and that is not happening, Tiger. And as I said, our statistics tell us that the greatest number of abuse cases comes from the immediate family and the extended family.
Is it more than not being taught their culture and the respect and the values of Aboriginal culture? I mean, this appears to be one of those sad traits of colonial colonial value that's found its way into our society.
Well, most certainly that's true. And the thing is that what's disturbing to me, and it should be disturbing to a whole lot of our people throughout this country, is that colonialism is still, it's not dead. It's very much alive today in its many, many forms. And unfortunately, a lot of our blokes are allowing the non-Aboriginal people to come in and control their business. And what I'm seeing throughout this country is that the governance in each of the communities has just been so much destroyed that there's very little hope in a lot of communities of it ever coming back. And if you haven't got your governance and control in your own community, control, if people don't take control, well, therefore, you're just opening the doors and letting the other people, the sharks, come in, and they just rip you off. And we know that I'm sure all of your listeners at the moment can come up with at least one or two places where they know that people are ripping off their the communities by, you know, allowing outsiders to come in and can take control and run the business of Aboriginal people.
Yeah. Brian, back to the situation where elders, the elder abuse, we've acknowledged that it's a trait of colonial values, one of the colonial values that's been brought into our society. That's no excuse for this. I mean, it shouldn't happen. But the thing is, what else do you put it down to? I mean, what are the issues there for people to have to go to their elders? And, well, there's a couple of questions. What is it? Well, what's the motivation behind it? But also, there's, I don't know, there must be some subtle ways or different ways of doing it. Is it blatant sort of robbery? Is it, oh, it's all right, Nana, I'll take your key card down and get the grocery for you and take a bit extra or all of it out or whatever? I mean, what are the circumstances here? Do you know any of these sorts of things?
Well, that's the very thing that I've been exposing here in South Australia for over the last 5 or 6 years or even more, when we had to bring in the federal, fraud squad, because shopkeepers and taxi drivers were holding the key cards of our people and had their ID numbers. And of course, they just had them over a barrel, and they had to go back to these shops because the shopkeeper, as I said, held the card. And as soon as the money comes into the old people's account, they transfer it straight away because they've got their ID numbers. And, of course, the old people don't even see their cards at all. Up in Indalkla, in the northwest of South Australia here, there's a place close to that place. There's a place called Mintaby. And that was where we first got the Commonwealth the Bank and the fraud squad to look at that mob up there. And they're still doing it. The old people have still got their key cards in places where the other people have got control of it. And in a lot of the cases, as I said before, some of the control is by their immediate family.
All right. And it's largely out in communities in the remote situations, or are you talking about in urban situations as well, Brian?
Metropolitan area. Right throughout the metropolitan area, we have big problems here in the metro where there's... Where the old people, we have to keep, and that's why I say, as I said, it's my job as the advocate to keep an eye on all of these old people, make sure they're getting their services, make sure that and you have to keep on talking to them, say, okay, ring up every few days to see if they're okay, if they're not being ripped off, and the young ones know that we're looking after them.
Mm.
And so, and hopefully that if we can get into some of the schools to get into the young people and just try and bring back some respect. And that's what we are doing here. And I'm sure that it happens in other states too. There are other people. I'm not the only one that is concerned like this. And I'm not the only one that looks out for our old people throughout this country. There's a lot of people. I know there's an army of people. But at the same time, there's still a lot of our old people that are slipping through
the abuse. Is there any violence in this stuff, or is it a more passive sort of thing? What are you? What's your experience in this?
Physical violence is certainly something that really worries us. You know, we've got a lot of people, a lot of our old people, and not so old people in wheelchairs, as a result of diabetes, as a result of car accidents and stuff like that. And, they're too frightened to go down the street because they get knocked off out of their blooming wheelchairs and they get their, drugs taken off them.
Mm.
So we need to worry about whether or not they're getting their medication, because we know that some of those people get pretty heavy, heavy dose of medication, and they're just prime targets for some of the young drugs, not only just our...
All right, Brian's dropped. went out a little bit there, mate. You there? No, you're gone. All right, we'll come back with Brian. It's a sad state of affairs, isn't it, when this sort of thing is happening also. It just makes you ask that question I asked earlier. What's going on? What's happening in society?
Well, so that's what I'm saying about we have to get mobilised to be able to get into the communities and make sure that we get people who are genuine to get governance back so that they can understand their rights. And see, one of the things that's happened is that the people have just given up hope. They say, oh, well, you know, we've got no rights. And so what's the point of busting our gut trying to get services and trying to get things which we need? But it's going to get worse because of the financial situation that the world's in now. You don't have to be a Philadelphia lawyer to work out the things are going to get worse. And if it's going to get worse for the mainstream, it's going to get 10 times worse for us.
Yes, no, well, things are going to get worse right across the board. There's no question about that. Yeah. Brian, what's your message to your mob, to people in the communities, and to our listeners when you're observing and experiencing abuse of our elders? And it doesn't matter whether elders are our mob or mainstream mob, black fellow, white fellow, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's right.
They shouldn't be abused. What's your message, mate?
Well, going back in the times when we were in Port Augusta, we recognised that this is going back now nearly 30 years. We started off a preschool for our little two-year-olds, right? One and a half to two-year-olds. This because we didn't have any of our little kids in the kindergarten. We didn't have very many kids in Port Augusta in the primary school and none in the high school. So we picked a batch of 30 kids and we little tiny tots. We started off the preschool. We got the elders to come in and teach them principles of Aboriginal culture. They learned to be socially, they learned social skills, these little tiny ones. And then they went into the kindergarten. And then they went through into primary school. And they were the first batch of 30 kids. 100% of those kids went into high school. Now, that was, what was supposed to be happening all the way through in every community. We should have had these pre-preschools, and people should have been doing that on a grander scale, because then the kindergarten union came in and said, no, you're not conducting your preschool in accordance with the kindergarten union principles. So they cut the funds to that, and they turned it into mainstream kindergarten. From then on, things went backward again in Port Augusta, right? And that happens everywhere. And I say that if we as Aboriginal people, we don't have to wait till a government organisation or a government agency sets up a school or sets up something for our kids. We can get that going in our own little communities. We can have our learning sessions and learning, bring the oldies in to teach the little ones and teach them their social skills really, really early. And that's not happening enough today, and that's where it starts. And I think that once you, if you don't do that, if you don't give those little ones the opportunity to learn what respect is towards the oldies, once they get into the 7, 8 year up into primary school, into high school, it's too late. They get too cheeky to their old people, and they just will not listen to them. So my message to everybody is: start early. Start with those little tiny ones now, and make sure that the next generation and the next generation of old people are not going to face the sort of suffering and face the kind of abuse that they're experiencing today, Tiger.
That's a great message, Brian. The fact reminding our mob that we have the power in our communities, and it's time. It's only us that can forfeit that power or give that power away.
That's right.
By sitting back and saying, "Oh no, but that's a government responsibility." But oh no, we haven't got it. We haven't got a grant for this, and we haven't got a grant for that. Your point is, we've got the knowledge, we've got the value system still in place.
Yep.
Let's just do it.
That's right.
Yeah. No,
that's
it's right. A great message, mate. And that's a great story about those 30 preschool.
Yep.
Little ones.
So we know that works.
By gee, yeah. That's fantastic. And, well, like you say, it's not all that difficult to do. We've got a lot of old people, a lot of our old mob are sitting around. They'd love an opportunity.
That's right.
To be able to spend an hour or two a day or a couple of times a week in a situation like that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mm. Got a lot of merit for it, mate, and it's good that you've told us of that experience, by gee, it might.
We need to do that, and that's how the children's services, you know, some of those children's services and MAC services started off, and they realised the importance of bringing in elders to those MAC centres and children's services centres.
Yeah, no, it's great. Now then, the Docker River story some weeks back. That government's got a lot to answer for here, like probably as well as some of our own mob, I'm not too sure, but what can you tell us about that incident, the situation?
Well, I mean, we know. I mean, we've got a classic situation in the northwest of South Australia again, where the government have come in, they've built a facility for old people. Now, it's just, it's been sitting there like it's been there for nearly a year, to my knowledge, unused because it just can't be operated and people can't use it because it was built to a non-Aboriginal person's ideals. They didn't consult with Aboriginal people how the facility should have been used. And, of course, so now there's, you know... $1 million, I suppose, has gone down the gurgler. It's just sitting out in the scrub, simply because they won't talk to the old people. The old people keep on telling people what they want, and they just keep getting ignored. I'm really disgusted at the way in which the situation in Docker River turned out, because they just don't have people. They don't employ. They will set up these programs, but they won't employ proper people, and they won't employ people to on a full time basis to care for the old people. Sometimes the old people are just left to their own devices, you know, for overnight, and certainly sometimes for 1 or 2 days. And although we have programs in place, like the home and community care program on the lands. They're still under-resourced, and they're just in a lot of cases made to fail. I mean, set up programs to fail, and in the meantime, while the program's failing, the old people are suffering, and in these cases, dying. So, you know, as I said before, that's one of my responsibilities. I go up to the lands, and we monitor the Home and Community Care Program, commonly known as the HAC program, and that's what we just keep on doing. And we're trying to encourage other people in the other states, as I said before, in the territory, to do what I'm doing and set up advocacy. Have advocacy services so that people can go in there. I mean, there's other people. There are agencies already. There are Aboriginal organisations who should take on this responsibility anyway, because they have the responsibility to care for our elders. They don't need to wait until somebody with another authority comes along to make a report. There should be mandatory reporting of any abuse of our people, and unfortunately there isn't legislation to legislate for mandatory reporting of abuse to oldies.
That's a bit sad, a bit disappointing that there isn't legislation to put that in place.
Well, that's what happens. And while it's not there, people are reluctant to report any abuse because of fear of retribution back on themselves or their families.
How's the state government dealing with this? I mean, are we dealing with a couple of different state governments here? Is it just a Western Australian government, and a federal government?
Well, it's both. It's
right.
The feds, and each of the states and the territory governments. So, I mean, there's a hell of a lot left to be desired here in terms of properly caring for people in those situations, the helpless people that I'm talking about. You know.
Now you've got the minister. for ageing, and you've got the shadow minister, both saying yes, we've got to do more, we've got to do better and stuff. And there's been some $46 million for Indigenous aged care plan. There's some big money being put into the design of a safe fireplace by the Centre for Appropriate Technology out there in Alice Springs, eh?
That's right. But the thing is that in some cases they'd be talking to the right people, but mainly they don't talk to the right people, and mainly they don't engage the right people. The problem is, Tiger, you've got the federal government have got this where you can apply, anyone can apply to run an Aboriginal program. It's called the federal government's tendering process. Now, some of the local government councils run Aboriginal communities. I mean, they've applied for the funds because the governance in the community is broken down, like I said before, to such a degree where they just cannot control and cannot work their community properly and look after their community properly. They then subject to somebody from the outside applying to the federal government or the state to get money to run that program. And some of the local government, local government councils are actually running some Aboriginal communities. And anyone can actually apply for funds to run a program. They can set up an Aboriginal program and they'll get the funding. And that's what's happening through this tendering process.
All right.
And it happens in Queensland. You guys are subject to the same same government controls.
All right. Well, I want to take a break for a song and come back. I want to talk to you about the length of time you've been involved. You go back how far? Like when did you first?
I started looking for our kids when I was 14 years of age. 14 years of age from Alice Springs.
What were you doing then?
Well, I started advocating with the old people, but from then, 14 years of age, we started looking for the kids that went away.
Trying to track down the kids that were taken out of community. Yeah. Really, eh?
And I'm 70 now.
Brian, you were at 14 years of age. You say you started looking around for kids, stolen generations, children you're talking about, aren't you?
Tiger, up until the time we reached our teens, the likes of Charlie Perkins and other young fellas in Alice Springs and myself realised that something was terribly wrong with the community, that people were sad, old people were crying, kids were being removed through the hospital for reasons given that they had medical problems that could only be attended to in Adelaide or Brisbane or somewhere else out of Alice Springs, and a lot of the kids were taken out through the health department along in conjunction with the welfare.
And is this back in the 50s, is it?
Oh, this is going back earlier than that.
Right, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, back in the late 40s and that time. By the time we were teenagers, as I said, we started to ask questions ourselves. You know, what's happening? You know, and then the old people were starting to tell us and talk about things, because a lot of the situation with our dear loved ones, the ladies up there, in the Aboriginal women who were abused by the pastoralists and the train, the railway people, and all of those white fellows that came through the country there. They, we weren't silly. We started to wake up then. What was happening? That everybody was calling each other. We had to call each other cars, and we had to call each other the women aunties and uncles and stuff like this, because that's what they said, that that's how we have to recognise each other. And we thought, why? You know, because that what's happened? What's brought this all about? And of course, then we started realising that some of us were half brothers and half sisters as a result of some of these pastoralists and some of these policemen and welfare officers and all those sorts of people. And then we, you know, we knew that if it's like I was saying before, we knew that if something had to be done, we had to do it ourselves. And we decided that we were going to do it ourselves. We were going to go start looking for the kids that were taken away. And we ourselves were taken and went through the church groups. And we went down to a place called St. Francis House in South Australia. And from there, we started looking around. We saw a lot of kids that were in adopted situations, in adoptive settings, and foster care. And we could tell by their features that those kids didn't belong to South Australia. They were Northern Territory kids. And so then, for my personal story is that I then thought, well, if they're all here, a lot of kids here in South Australia, there must be other kids elsewhere. So I joined the Merchant Navy. It was the only way that I could get around the country. I went to Fremantle, Melbourne, Sydney, you know, Brisbane, Cairns, Townsville. And everywhere I went, I could see, I went looking out for these, for kids. I went to the schools, went around the streets, see lots and lots of Aboriginal kids and started asking questions. After a while, I was doing all of this, I could tell whether a kid came from Western Australia, whether they come from Queensland or Victoria. If it wasn't from the way they talked, it was the way they looked, their features.
Mm.
That's how I got started. And then, of course, Molly Dyer was and Mum Shells, and there were a whole army of people also doing this around Australia, the women. There were a whole army of people that were doing this, looking for the kids and trying to fight the welfare and the government in respect to the removals. And so, I certainly don't take credit for, and our group, SNAKE and the Child Care Agency, has credit for all of the work that was done in relation to looking for the children and fighting the government in relation to the removals. So, when Molly Dyer went across to America to see what was happening there with the Indian situation, they met up with a woman called Maxine Robbins, and she was the Indian Molly Dyer, if you like, of over there doing all this sort of work. And so she came back then. Molly came back after looking at how they got their legislation, Indian legislation for the protection of Indian children. And so Molly came back and set up the ACCA in Victoria, and then she encouraged all of us around the other states and the territory to do likewise. And I went across and for a little bit there with her and saw what she was doing, and came back to South Australia and launched the ACCA here. And of course, all those ACCAs and children's services around the country then formed together a body that was known then as SNAKE, which was Secretariat for National Aboriginal and Islander Child Care. And then we, as you know, pushed for the inquiry, and the rest is history. But unfortunately, after all that's been done, we're still seeing a lot of our children today being removed and separated from mothers, families and community by welfare. Unfortunately, we haven't actually stopped the practice. But that's how we got started way back then. And as I said, I wasn't the only one. There were hundreds and hundreds of people in their own way fighting the system, battling the system, until we knew then that once we set up the SNAKE, that people then started coming together and telling the stories. But there's still thousands of our people who haven't told their stories. Until such times as they do, they're not going to be able to get on with the healing process. And hopefully that we can, the work of SNAKE, which is still happening. Victoria is very, very strong in their work, and so too are people in Queensland in respect to getting things right for our children.
All right. Now, you've seen the Bringing Them Home report about Stolen Generations.
Yep.
There was a recognition in that report, or it's been there's a demand, there's a recognition that the compensation, for this healing to take place, full and proper healing, that there should be compensation paid out.
Yeah, I mean that was one of the 54 recommendations, but here again, Targa, we really didn't need to have. I'm one that was demanding that we have compensation. I'm one that's demanding that we have reparations. I'm one that is demanding that more support is given to people that are in difficult circumstances to be able to get on with the healing and to be supported to in healing themselves so they can get on and enjoy their life. But we don't have to wait until we get Commonwealth money. We don't have to wait till somebody else comes along and starts that. We can help our, you know, we should be helping ourselves in this process of looking out for our oldies, you know, in this process of looking out for our kids. That's our responsibility. You know, if we see somebody that's down the street or something that's suffering because of the fact that they've been removed and they've been separated from their families and their communities for many, many years, it's our responsibility to go up and give a little bit of support to that person and try and help that person instead of, you know, just letting that person just go, you know, crawl into a bottle or keep suffering until they die prematurely.
Yes, certainly some work to be done yet. How do you feel with regards to the federal government? I mean, there was the apology down there that, to a lot of us, it seems a bit hollow, again, without the recognition of compensation. And then there's the Australian government refusing to sign the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the World's Indigenous People. Now there's a Northern Territory review that the federal government turns back on.
Yeah.
What, I mean, do things look all that much better under a Rudd government than they did under Howard?
Well, the inquiry, the apology, all those sorts of things are levers. You know, they're instruments for us to, you know, the human rights. I mean, we must continue to put pressure on the United Nations and the government here to sign up to the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People throughout this world. We must do that. You know, we must keep on doing that. But the thing is that we just use, you know, you have the apology is just a lever for us to use ourselves. It's not going to, the apology wasn't going to, I mean, although there was a wave of over this country of goodwill, we knew that. You know, every Aboriginal person that I've spoken to and every white person that I spoke to said they felt this wave of goodwill come over the country. Right, okay, so what are you going to do with that goodwill? You don't just stand there and let some other magic cloud come over and something happen. You've got to work out how you use that tool. On the local level, and on the state level, and the federal level, and that's what I keep saying to our people. And I'm still engaged in the and involved in the Stolen Generations Alliance as well. And I keep saying to them, make sure that you get your work happening on the local level. Make sure that the healing is taking place down there. Although we're pushing for a healing foundation, we want the government to recognise and give us another tool, if you like, by giving us the setting up of a healing foundation. So if that happens, it's still going to be up to us to make that work. The Aboriginal community, each and every one of us, we've got to make that work. We've got to do things. And while we strive collectively for major events to happen, and if we achieve those major events, then we work out what we're going to do with it, you know? And unfortunately, a lot of our people, use those tools but for themselves, and unfortunately, only too few of our Aboriginal families and too few of our Aboriginal communities benefit from it because they leave the rest of us behind.
Yeah. All right, Brian. Listen, thanks very much for joining us today. It's been good to have you on board, and it seems your message is loud and strong that it's time more of us got up off our butts and did a bit more. We empowered ourselves. So, mate, thank you very much for joining us, eh?
Pleasure, Ty.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye.
Brian Butler from Adelaide joining us.